Johnny felt the here-ness of here. It had happened here, not in some far-off country full of odd names and foreign people with thick moustaches shouting slogans. It had happened here, where there were public libraries and zebra crossings and people who did the football pools. Bombs would come crashing through roofs and ceilings and down to the cellars and turn the world white. "You're right," said a voice a long way away. Kirsty waved a hand in front of his face. "Are you okay?" "I was just thinking," said Johnny. He stood up. "We didn't come back here by accident," he said. "I was thinking a lot about tonight, and we ended up coming here just in time. I don't know why, but we've got to do something, even if there's nothing we can do. So I'm going to..." A bicycle came around the corner. It was bouncing up and down on the cobbles, and the skinny figure riding it was a mere blur. It clanked to a halt in front of them. They stared at the cyclist. He was shaking so much he looked slightly out of focus. "Big Mac?" shuddered Big Mac. "How many fingers am I holding up?" said Kirsty. "19. Hide the bike." "Why?" said Kirsty. "I didn't do anything." "Ah," said Joe less knowingly. "It's like that, is it?" He picked up the bike and wheeled it into the sooty shrubs. "Like what?" said Kirsty, looking bewildered. "Big Mac always never does anything," said Johnny.
They shot at me."
"Wow," said Yo Less.
There was this car."
The ringing Johnny had heard before started again somewhere behind the buildings.
That's a police car," said Big Mac. "I tried to give them the slip down Harold Wilson Drive and it wasn't there. And one of them shot at me with an actual gun."
They dragged the trembling Big Mac into the horrible bushes. Kirsty gave him her Mac to stop him shivering.
"All right, game over." "I said game over," he moaned. "Let's pack it in, all right? Let's go home."
"I think we should try to tell people about the bombs," Johnny said. "Someone might listen. And if they ask you how do you know, you'll say you're from 1996, will you?"
"Maybe you could, you know, write a note," said Yo Less. "Slip it into someone's letterbox?"
"Oh, yes," said Kirsty hotly. "What should we write? Go for a long walk, perhaps, or wear a very hard hat?" She stopped when she saw Johnny's expression. "Sorry," she said. "I didn't mean that."
"Wobbler,"
said Yo Less. They turned. Wobbler was toiling along the street. It took some effort for Wobbler to manage a run, but when he did so, there was also something terribly unstoppable about him. He spotted them and changed direction.
"Am I glad to see you," he panted. "Let's get out of here. Some loony kid chased me, kept shouting out that I was a spy."
"All right," said Kirsty. "We're all here. Let's go."
"You know I don't know how," said Johnny. "It's your mind that works it," said Kirsty. "It must be. You go where you're thinking."
"Oh, come on," said Yo Less. "That's like magic." Johnny stared at the bags lying in the trolley. "I could try," he said. A police car went by a street away.
"Let's get somewhere more hidden," said Yo Less.
"Good idea," muttered Big Mac. A cinder path went around the back of the little church to an area with dustbins and a heap of dead flowers. There was a small green door. It opened easily. They manhandled the trolley into a back room. Johnny stared at the sacks. "All right," he thought. "Let's say they're full of time. Mrs. Tachyon collects time like other old ladies collect string. Oh, this is daft." But there was a deep rumbling sound. Guilty had sat up in the trolley and was purring happily. Johnny took a sack and held it carefully by the neck. It felt warm, and he was sure it moved slightly under his grip. "This probably won't work," he said. He shut his eyes and tried to think of 1996. The thought crept into his mind from somewhere outside. It's not a time. It's a place. It's a place where the model of the space shuttle on the ceiling hangs by a bit of red wool because you ran out of black thread. It's a place where your mum just smokes a lot and looks out of the window. It's a place where your granddad watches TV all day. It's where you want it to be. He opened the bag. Just a fraction. Wobbler swallowed. He said. He turned around, and then, just in case, He looked behind the table.
Guys? Johnny? Big Mac? Go less?
He swallowed again, but sometimes you just had to face up to unpleasant facts, and so he bravely said,
Kirsty?
No one answered. There was no one there to answer. He heard a noise and turned around.
Huh, I bet you thought you'd got me going. What?
The over-50s Keep Fit class was in full wheeze. The tutor had long ago given up expecting everyone to keep up, so she just pressed on in the hope that people would do what they could manage, and, if possible, not actually die while on the premises.
And bend, and bend, and bend, and do the best you can, Miss Windex. Step, and step, and step, and...
What? She blinked. Johnny looked around. The Keep Fit class, after 10 minutes of aerobics, were not the most observant people. One or two of them actually made space for the newcomers. The tutor hesitated. She'd been brought up to believe in a healthy mind in a healthy body. And since she was pretty sure she had a healthy body, it was not possible, she reasoned, that a group of people and an overloaded shopping trolley could have suddenly appeared at the back of the old church hall. They must have just come in, she thought. Admittedly, there was no actual door there, but people certainly didn't just appear out of thin air.
Where are we?
Kirsty hissed.
Same place, whispered Yoles. Different time.
Even some of the slower fitness fans had caught up by now. The whole class had stopped and turned around and were watching them with interest.
We'll say something, said Kirsty. Everyone's looking.
Is this pottery? Said Johnny.
What?
Said the tutor. We're looking for beginner's pottery, said Johnny. A small light went on behind the tutor's eyes. She grabbed at the familiar words like a singer snatching a microphone.
That's Thursdays, she said, in the Red Cross Hall.
Oh, is it? We're always getting it wrong. They all grabbed hold of the trolley. Track-suited figures limped politely out of the way as it squeaked its way across the floor, bumped down the step, and landed in the damp yard outside. Johnny pushed the door shut behind them. Where's Wobbler? They looked around.
Oh, no, said Johnny. They were Wobbler-less.
I ain't going back, said Big Mac, backing away. Not to get shot at.
He wouldn't have wandered off again, would he? Said Kirsty.
No, said Johnny. He must still be there.
Look, get a grip, will you? Said Kirsty. You said the church doesn't get hit. He's okay.
Yes, but he's okay in 1941. And then he thought of the bombers nosing through the clouds over the houses and the footballers and all those clean doorsteps.
You're right, said Yoles.
Let's get a drink at least,
said Kirsty, heading towards the town centre. And then she stopped. Johnny hadn't often seen her shocked. Kirsty normally dealt with the terrible and the unexpected by getting angry with it. But now she stopped and went pale.
Oh, no, she said.
The road from the old church led down the hill towards traffic lights at the bottom. An overloaded shopping trolley with a boy and a girl clinging to it was hurtling down the other road. As they watched, it heeled over like a yacht tacking against the wind, turned a full 90 degrees, and plunged into the car park of the Neil Armstrong shopping mall. A long black car followed it.
Johnny could see a map in his head, but it was a map of time. They'd moved in time at his house, but Yoles was right. You could probably move in time like a train on a track, so you flipped over onto another track just a little bit further along. You moved in space, really. And he'd done it again when he thought they were going to die at the traffic lights, and the black car had vanished because it didn't exist in this time. He definitely hadn't seen it when he'd looked behind him. They'd come back to a time when it existed. The car pulled to a halt outside the mall. A feeling of absolute certainty stole over Johnny. He knew the answer. Later on, with any luck, he'd find out what the question was. But right now, he was sure of the answer.
He started to run. He dodged across the road. A car hooted at him. Across in the car park, a man in black with black sunglasses and a peaked black cap got out of the car and hurried into the mall. Johnny leapt over the low wall into the car park and weaved between shoppers and their trolleys and panted to a halt in front of the car. In the bright sunlight, it looked even blacker than Johnny remembered. Its engine ticked occasionally as it cooled down. On the hood was a silver ornament. It looked very much like a hamburger. He ran around and snatched at the handle of the back door, yanking it open. "All right, I know you're in there. Who are you really?" Most of the figure was in deep shade, but there was a pair of hands visible, resting on a black cane with a silver head. Then the figure moved. It unfolded slowly and became a large man in a garment that was half coat, half cloak. He emerged carefully, making sure both feet were firmly on the ground before easing the rest of his body out of the car. He was quite tall, tall enough so that he was big rather than fat. He wore a large black hat and had a short, silvery beard. He smiled at Johnny and nodded at the others as they hurried up.
"Who am I?" he said. "Well now, why don't you guess? You were always good at this sort of thing."
Johnny looked at him, and then at the car, and then back up the hill to where the old church was just visible. The old man patted him on the shoulder.
"Call me Sir John," he said.
There were differences in the Mall. One big difference, certainly. The burger bar had changed. There were different shaped paper hats, and the colour scheme was blue and white instead of red and yellow. The old man led the way.
"Who is he?"
hissed Kirsty. "You'll laugh if I tell you. This is time travel. I'm still trying to work out the rules." Sir John sat down heavily in a seat, motioned them to sit down as well, and then did the second worst thing anyone could do in a fast food restaurant. He snapped his fingers at a waitress. All the staff were watching them anxiously.
"Young lady," said Sir John, wheezing slightly, "these people will have whatever they want. I will have a glass of water."
"Yes, Sir John," said the waitress, and hurried away.
"You're not supposed to do that,"
said Big Mac hoarsely.
"You're supposed to queue up."
"No, you're supposed to queue up," said Sir John. "I don't have to."
"Have you always been called Sir John?" said Johnny. The man winked at him.
"You know, don't you?" he said. "You've worked it out. You're right. Names are easily changed, especially in wartime. I thought it might be better. I got the knighthood in 1964 for services to making huge amounts of money."
The waitress hurried back with the water and then produced a notebook and looked expectantly at them all.
I'll have everything," said Yolis.
"Me too,"
said Big Mac. "Cheeseburger?" said Johnny.
"Chili bean burger," said Kirsty. "And I want to know what's going on, okay?"
Sir John beamed at her in a slightly distracting way. Then he nodded at the waitress.
"Make me one with everything," he said slowly and carefully, as if quoting something he'd heard a long time ago, "because I want to become a Muslim."
"A Buddhist," said Yolis without thinking. "You always muck up the
Then his mouth dropped open. "Do I?" said Wobbler.
"Well, I hung around for a while and you didn't come back," he said. "And then..."
"But we did. I mean, we will,"
said Kirsty.
"This is where it gets difficult," said Wobbler patiently. "Johnny knows. Supposing you didn't go back. Supposing you were scared to or found that you couldn't. The possibility exists, and that means the future forks off in two different ways. In one you went back, in one you didn't. Now you've ended up in the future where you didn't go back. I've been here since 1941. Don't try to think too hard about this, because it'll make your brain hurt. Anyway, first I stayed with Mr. and Mrs. Seeley," he continued. "I'd met them that first day. Their son was away in the Navy, and everyone thought I was an evacuee who was a bit daft, and what with one thing and another. There's too much to worry about in a big war for people to ask too many questions about one fat boy. They were very nice people. They sort of adopted me, I suppose, because their son got torpedoed. Changing my name wasn't hard either. In a war, well, records go missing, people get killed, everything gets shaken up. A person can duck down and pop up somewhere else as someone else. I was in the army for a few years after the war."
"You?"
said Big Mac.
"Oh, everyone had to be. National Service, it was called, out in Berlin. And then I came back and had to make a living. I opened a hamburger bar.
Johnny looked around and then started to grin.
That's right, said Wobbler. In 1952. I knew it all, you see. Thick shakes, double smashers with cheese and egg, paper hats for the staff, red sauce in those little round plastic bottles that look like tomatoes. Oh, yes. I had 3 bars in the first year and 10 the year after that. Oh, there's thousands now. Other people just couldn't keep up. I knew what would work, you see. Birthday treats for the kids, the Willy Wobbler clown.
Willy Wobbler, said Kirsty.
Sorry, they were more innocent times, said Wobbler. And then I started other things. Soft toilet paper for a start. Honestly, the stuff they had back in the 1940s you could use as roofing felt. And when that was going well, I started to listen to people. People with bright ideas, like, I think I could make a tape recorder really small so that people could carry it around. And, you know, I think I know a way of making a machine to record television signals on tape so that people could watch them later.
That's dishonest, said Kirsty. That's cheating.
I don't see why, said Wobbler. People were amazed that I'd listened to them, because everyone else thought they were crazy. I made money, but so did they.
Are you a millionaire? Said Big Mac.
Oh, no, I was a millionaire back in 1955. I'm a billionaire now, I think.
He snapped his fingers again. The chauffeur in black, who had silently appeared behind them, stepped forward.
I am a billionaire, aren't I, Hickson?
Yes, Sir John. Many times.
Thought so. And I think I own some island somewhere. What was it called now? Tasmania, I think.
Wobbler patted his pockets as if looking for something, and finally brought out a slim silver case. He flicked it open and took out 2 white pills, which he swallowed. He grimaced and sipped from his glass of water.
You haven't touched your one with everything, said Johnny, watching him.
Oh, I only asked for it just to make the point, said Wobbler. I'm not allowed to eat them, good heavens. I have a diet, no sodium, no cholesterol, low starch, no sugar, he sighed. Even a glass of water is probably too exciting.
You're ill, aren't you? Said Johnny.
Is it obvious?
You keep taking pills, and your breathing doesn't sound right.
Wobbler smiled again, but this time there was no humour in it.
I'm suffering from life. However, I'm nearly cured.
Look, said Kirsty, in the voice of one who is trying to be reasonable against the odds. We weren't going to leave you there. We were going to go back. We will go back.
Good, said Wobbler.
You don't mind? Because surely, if we do, you won't exist, will you?
Oh, I will somewhere, said Wobbler.
That's right, said Johnny. Everything that happens stays happened somewhere. There's lots of times side by side.
You always were a bit of an odd thinker, said Wobbler. I remember that. An imagination so big it's outside your head. Now, what was the other thing?
Oh, yes. Wobbler reached into his jacket and took out an envelope. He handed it to Johnny.
I'm not telling you to go back, he said. I've got no right. I've had a pretty good life, one way and another.
But, said Johnny.
Through the glass doors of the Mall he could see a car and 4 motorcycles pull up.
I'm sorry, said Wobbler.
The next word you were going to say was but, said Johnny.
Men were hurrying up the steps.
Yes,
but, Wobbler leant forward and began speaking quickly.
If you go back, I've written a letter to, well, you'll know what to do with it. I know I really shouldn't do it, but who could pass up an opportunity like this?
He stood up, or at least attempted to. Hickson rushed up as Wobbler caught the edge of his chair, but was waved away.
I never had any children, said Wobbler. Never got married, don't know why, really. It just didn't seem right.
He leant heavily on his stick and turned back to them.
I want to be young again, he said. Somewhere.
We were going to go back, said Johnny. Honestly.
Good. But you see, it's not just a case of going back. It's going back and doing the right things.
And then he was gone, walking heavily towards the men with the suits, who closed in behind him.
It was an hour later. They met behind the church in the damp little yard where they'd left the trolley. All right, said Kirsty. If we're going back to 1941, let's go prepared this time.
Where did you get that outfit, Johnny? Grandad's got loads of stuff in the attic. These are his old football shorts, and he always wears old pullovers, so I thought that was probably okay too. And I've got my project stuff in this box in case it helps. It's genuine 1940s. It's what they carried gas masks in. At least take the cap off. You look like just William, said Kirsty. What's this, Yoles? Me and Big Mac went along to the theatre shop in Wallace Street, said Yoles. What do you think? He added uncertainly. He shuffled round nervously. He was wearing a broad-brimmed hat, shoes with soles like two bumper cars parked side by side, and tight trousers. At least, what could be seen of the trousers looked tight. Is that an overcoat? Said Johnny critically. It's called a drape jacket, said Yoles. Bright red, said Kirsty. Yes, I can see no one will notice you at all. And those trousers, you must have had to grease your feet to get them on. It looks a bit stylish, said Johnny. You know, jazzy. I mean, I've never seen you looking so, you know, cool. That's why it's a disguise, said Yoles. Kirsty turned to Big Mac and sighed. Why is it I get this feeling you've missed the point? I told him, said Yoles, but he wouldn't listen. The man said they wore this in 1941, said Big Mac defensively. Yes, but don't you think that people might notice it's a German uniform? Is it? I thought they had all swastikas and stuff. That's the Gestapo. You're dressed up like an ordinary German soldier. I can't help it. It's the only one they had left. It was this or chain mail. At least leave the jacket and helmet off, all right? Then it'll probably look like any other uniform. Why are you wearing that fur coat, Kirsty? Said Johnny. You always say that wearing the skins of dead animals is murder. Yeah, but she only says it to old ladies in fur coats, muttered Big Mac under his breath. Bet she never says it to Hell's Angels in leather jackets. Let's get on with it, shall we? Said Kirsty, ignoring him. The Keep Fit people had long ago staggered home. Johnny shoved the trolley into the middle of the floor and stared at the bags. Guilty was still asleep on a couple of them. Johnny picked up a bag. It seemed to wriggle in his grasp. With great care, he loosened the string and concentrated. It was easier this time. Before, he'd just been dragged along like a cork in a current. This time, he knew where he was going. He could feel the time. Minds moved in time all the time. All the sacks did was let your body come too, just like Mrs. Tachyon had said. Years spiralled into the bag like water down a plug hole. Time sucked out of the room. And then there were the pews and the scent of highly polished holiness. And Wobbler turning around with his mouth open.
What?
It's all right. It's us, said Johnny.
Are you all right?
Said Yoles. Wobbler might not have been the winner of the All-Europe Uptake speed trials, but an expression of deep suspicion spread across his face as he looked at them.
What's up? He said. You're all looking at me as if I'd gone weird. And what are you all dressed up for? Why's Big Mac wearing a German uniform?
We've just come back to fetch you, said Johnny. There's no problem. That's right. No problem at all, said Yoles. Everything's fine.
Yeah, fine. Everything's fine, said Big Mac. You're not feeling old, are you?
What, after 5 minutes? Said Wobbler.
Johnny opened the door of the church. Outside, Wednesday afternoon was turning into Wednesday evening. It was raining gently. He took a deep breath of 1941 air. It smelt of coal and pickles and jam, with a hint of hot rubber.
What did we do here that changed the future? He said, turning round.
Practically everything, I suppose, said Kirsty. And Big Mac left all his stuff at the police station.
They shot at me. Let's face it, said Yoles. Anything we do changes the future. Maybe we bumped into someone so he was 5 seconds late crossing the road and got hit by a car or something. Any little thing changes the whole of history.
Said Wobbler. There was this kid. He was running away from home or something. To home, I mean.
What do you mean, running to home?
Oh, he was going on about being evacuated here and being fed up and running off to London, but he followed me back into town because he said I was a spy and he ran off down that road there.
Paradise Street, said Johnny.
What about it? Said Wobbler, looking worried.
It's going to be bombed tonight, said Kirsty.
Are you sure it was Paradise Street? Said Johnny. Are you sure? Did you have any relatives there? Grandparents? Great-grandparents?
I don't know. One of my granddads lives in Spain and the other one died before I was born, fell off a motorbike in 1971.
Wobbler brightened.
So, that's all right.
Oh, Wobbler, Wobbler, it's not all right, said Johnny. Where did he live?
I don't know, London, I think. My dad said he came up here in the war, and then later on he came back on a visit and met my grandma.
How old was he when he died? Said Yoles.
40, my dad said. He bought the bike for his birthday.
So he's, Johnny subtracted in his head. 10 now. You don't think he was that boy, do you? Said Yoles.
Johnny fished in his gas mask box and pulled out a crumpled paper folder stuffed with newspaper clippings.
Did he mention any names?
Someone called Mrs. Density.
Number 11, said Johnny. Lived there with her daughter Gladys.
My grand's name was Gladys, said Wobbler. You mean, because he didn't run off back to London, he's going to die tonight and I'm not going to be born?
They all looked at Johnny.
You got us into this, said Yoles.
Me?
It's your imagination, said Kirsty. It's too big for your head, just like Sir J...
She stopped.
Just like I've always said, she corrected herself, and it drags everyone else along with it. I don't know how, but it does. You got all worked up about Paradise Street, and now here we are.
You said it didn't make any difference if the street got bombed or not, said Johnny. You said it was just history. I don't want to be history, moaned Wobbler.
All right, you win, said Kirsty. What do you want us to do?
Well, what I found out for my project was that there was a big storm, you see. The weather got very bad, and the bombers must have seen Blackbury and dropped their bombs anyway and turned around. That used to happen. There is an air raid siren. It was supposed to go off if bombers were near, he said. Only it didn't.
Why not?
Let's start by finding out, said Johnny.
It was on a pole on the roof in the High Street. It didn't look very big.
That's all it is, said Yoles. Looks like a giant yo-yo.
That's an air raid siren, all right, said Kirsty. I saw a picture in a book.
How do they work? Set off by radar or something?
I'm sure that's not been invented yet, said Johnny.
Well, how then?
Maybe there's a switch somewhere.
It'd be somewhere safe then, said Yoles. Somewhere where people wouldn't be able to set it off for a laugh.
Their joint gaze travelled down the pole, across the roof, down the wall, past the blue lamp, and stopped when it met the words, police station.
Oh dear, said Yoles.
It's a good job we left Big Mac and Wobbler to guard the trolley.
Kirsty sighed.
Honestly, you boys haven't got a clue.
She stood up, crossed the road, and began to talk to the policeman.
Excuse me, officer.
He gave her a friendly smile.
Yes, little lady. Out in your mum's clothes, are you?
Kirsty's eyes narrowed.
Oh, dear, said Johnny under his breath.
I was just wondering, said the little lady through clenched teeth, how that big siren works.
Oh, I shouldn't worry your head about that, love, said the policeman. It's very complicated.
You wouldn't understand.
Look for something to hide behind, said Johnny, like another planet.
Then his mouth dropped open as Kirsty won a medal.
It's just that I get so worried, she said, and managed a simper, or what she probably thought was a simper. I'm sure Mr. Hitler's bombers are going to come one night and the siren won't go off. Oh, I can't get to sleep for worrying.
The policeman laid a hand on the shoulder of the girl who had left Blackbury Karate Club because no boy would dare come within 2 metres of her.
Ho, 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 we can't have that, love, he said.
He pointed.
See up there on Blackdown? Well, Mr. Hodder and his very brave men are up there every night keeping a lookout. If any planes come near here tonight, he'll ring the station in a brace of shakes. Don't you worry.
But supposing the phone doesn't work?
Oh, then he'll be down on his bike in no time.
Bike? A bike, that's all?
It's a motorbike, said the policeman, giving her the nervous looks everyone eventually gave Kirsty.
She just stared at him.
It's a blackberry phantom," he added still further, in a tone of voice that suggested this should impress even a girl.
"Oh, really? Oh, that's a relief," said Kirsty. "I feel a lot better for knowing that. Really."
"That's right. There's nothing for you to worry about, love," said the policeman happily.
"I'll just go off and play with my dolls, I expect," said Kirsty.
"That's a good idea. Have a tea party," said the policeman, who apparently didn't know withering scorn when he heard it. Kirsty crossed the road, glaring.
"What's so special about a blackberry phantom, anyway?" she asked.
"They used to make them here," said Johnny. "They were quite famous, I think. Grandad used to have one." They raised their eyes to the dark shape of Black Down. It had loomed over the town even back in 1996, but then it had a TV mast.
"That's it?" said Kirsty. "Men just sitting on hills and listening?"
"Well, blackberry wasn't very important," said Johnny. "We made jam and pickles and rubber boots, and that was about it."
"I wonder what's going to go wrong tonight," said Yoles.
"We could climb up there and find out," said Johnny.
"Hang on," said Kirsty. "Think, will you? How do you know we might not cause what's going to go wrong tonight?"
Johnny hesitated. For a moment, he looked like a statue. Then he said, "No, if we start thinking like that, we'll never do anything.
We've already messed up the future once. Everything we do affects the future."
"It always has. It always will. So what? Let's get the others." There was no question of using the roads, not with the police still looking for a Big Mac who, with a wardrobe of costumes to choose from, had chosen to go back in time wearing a German soldier's uniform. They'd have to use the fields and footpaths, which meant...
"We'll have to leave the trolley," said Yoles. "We can shove it in the bushes here."
"That means we'll be stuck here if anything goes wrong," said Big Mac.
"Well, I'm not lugging it through mud and stuff. What if someone finds it? We better guard it."
"No!"
shouted Wobbler. His face was bright red with terror.
"I'm not stopping here by myself again, supposing you don't come back."
"Of course we'll come back," said Johnny. "We came back this time, didn't we?"
"Yes, but supposing you don't. Supposing you get run over by a lorry or something. What'll happen to me?"
Johnny thought about the envelope in his inside pocket. Yoles and Big Mac were looking at their feet. Even Kirsty was looking away.
"Here," said Wobbler suspiciously. "This is time travel, right? Do you know something horrible?"
"We don't know anything," said Big Mac.
"Look, I'll stay with you. I'll probably only get shot anyway if I go anywhere." "What are you going to do up on Blackdown anyway?" said Wobbler. "Find this Mr. Hodder and tell him to listen really carefully?"
"I don't know what we can do," said Johnny. "But something must have gone wrong, right? Maybe the message didn't get through. We'll have to make sure it does."
"Look," said Kirsty. The sun had already set, leaving an afterglow in the sky, and there were clouds over Black Down. Dark clouds.
"Thunderstorm," she said. "They always start up there."
There was a growl in the distance.
Blackberry was a lot smaller once they were in the hills. A lot of it wasn't there at all.
The clouds were getting lower. It was going to be one of those blackberry storms, a sort of angry fog that hugged the hills.
"You know what I'm thinking," said Kirsty.
"Telephone lines," said Johnny. "They go out in thunderstorms."
"Right.
But the policeman said there was a motorbike," said Yoles.
"Starts first time, does it?" said Johnny.
"I remember my grandad said that before you were qualified to ride a blackberry phantom, you had to learn to push it 50 metres, cursing all the way. He said they were great bikes when they got started.
How long is it till, you know, the bombs?"
"About an hour."
"Which means they're already on the way," Johnny thought. "Men have walked out onto airfields and loaded bombs onto planes with names like Dorniers and Heinkels. And other men have sat round in front of a big map of England, only it had been German, and there'd be crayon marks around slate. Blackberry probably wasn't even on the map. And then they'd get up and walk out and get into the planes and take off. And men on the planes would get out their maps and draw lines on them, lines which crossed at slate. Your mission for tonight, bomb the goods yards at slate."
and then the roar filled his ears. The drone of the engines came up through his legs. He could taste the oil and the sweat and the stale rubber smell of the oxygen mask. His body shook with the throb of the engines and also with the thump of distant explosions. One was very close, and the whole aircraft seemed to slide sideways, and he knew what the mission for tonight was. Your mission for tonight is to get home safely. It always was. It's starting to happen, he whispered, while the storm broke around him.
What is?
The future. He blinked as the rain started to plaster his hair against his head. He could feel time stretching out around him. He could feel its slow movement as it carried him forward. They were all carried along by it. You couldn't break out of it because you were part of it. You couldn't steer a train.
We'd better get him under cover,
shouted Yoles, as lightning hit something a little way off.
He doesn't look well at all.
They staggered on, occasionally lurking under a wind-bent tree to get their breath back. There was a windmill on one of the mounds, although the sails had long gone. They ran through the soaking heather until they reached it and climbed the steps. Yoles hammered on the door. It opened a fraction.
Good Lord, said a young man. What are you, a circus? You've got to let us in, said Kirsty. He's ill.
Can't do that, said the voice. Not allowed, see?
Do we look like spies? Shouted Yoles. Please, said Kirsty.
The door started to close and then stopped.
Well, all right,
said the voice as unseen hands pulled the door open.
But Mr. Hodder says to stand where we can see you, okay? Come on in.
It's happening, said Johnny, who still had his eyes closed. The telephone won't work.
What's he going on about?
Can you try the telephone? Said Kirsty.
Why? What's wrong with it? Asked a boy. We tested it out at the beginning of the shift just now. Has anyone been mucking about with it?
There was an older man sitting at a table. He gave them a suspicious look.
I reckon you'd better try the station, he said. I don't like the sound of this. It seems altogether suspicious to me. The first man reached out towards the phone.
There was a sound outside as lightning struck somewhere close. It wasn't a swoop. It was almost a gentle silken hiss as the sky was cut in half. Then the phone exploded. Bits of Bakelite and copper clattered off the walls. Kirsty's hand flew to her head.
My hair stood on end. So did mine, said Yoles. And that doesn't often happen, believe me.
Lightning hit the wire, said Johnny.
I knew that. Not just here, other stations on the hills too. And now he'll have trouble with the motorbike. What's he going on about?
You've got a motorbike, haven't you? Said Kirsty.
So what? Good grief, man, you've lost your telephone. Aren't you supposed to do something about that?
The men looked at one another. Girls weren't supposed to shout like Kirsty.
Tom, nip down to Dr. Atkinson's and use his phone and tell the station ours has gone for a Burton, said Mr. Hodder, not taking his eyes off them. Tell them about these three, too.
It won't start, said Johnny. It's the carburettor, I think, that always gives trouble. The one called Tom looked at him sideways. There was a change in the air. Up until now, the men had just been suspicious. Now, they were uneasy, too.
How did you know that? He said.
Johnny opened his mouth and shut it again.
He couldn't tell them about the feel of the time around him. He felt that if he could only focus his eyes properly, he could even see it. The past and future were there, just around some kind of corner, bound up to the ever-travelling now by a billion connections. He felt that he could almost reach out and point, not there, or over there, or up there, but there, at right angles to everywhere else.
They're on their way, he said. They'll be here in half an hour.
What, Will? What's he going on about?
Blackberry is going to be bombed tonight, said Kirsty.
We think, said Yoles.
Five planes, said Johnny. It's the storm and the clouds. They think they're going to Slate, but they'll drop their bombs over Blackberry.
Oh, yes? And how do you know this, then? They told you, did they?
Listen, you stupid man, said Kirsty. We're not spies. Why would we tell you if we were?
Mr. Hodder pulled open the door.
I'm going down to use the doctor's phone, he said. Then maybe we can sort out what's going on.
He shut the door behind him. Johnny scrabbled at the playing cards on the table.
What are these for? He said urgently. Playing cards with bombers on them. What? Oh, that's for learning aircraft recognition, said Tom, who'd been careful to keep the table between him and Johnny. You play cards with them and you sort of picks up the shapes like. Outside, there was the sound of someone trying to start a motorbike. Johnny stood up. All right, he said. I can prove it. The next card you show me, the next card... Images filled his eyes. If this is how Mrs. Tachyon sees the world, he thought, no wonder she never seems all there, because she's everywhere. Outside, there was the sound of someone trying to start a motorbike even harder. The next card will be the Five of Diamonds. He grabbed a card at random and held it up. It's the Five of Diamonds, all right, said Yoles. The next one will be the Knave of Hearts, it was. Outside, there was the sound of someone trying to start a motorbike very hard and swearing. It's a trick, said the young man. One of you messed around with the pack. Shuffle them all you like, said Johnny, and the next one you show me will be the Ten of Clubs. How did you do that? Said Yoles, as the man turned the card over and stared at it. It had felt like memory, he told himself. I remembered seeing it, said Johnny. Kirsty had turned to Tom. You see, she said, now do you believe us? I don't like this. This isn't right, he said. Anyway, there's no phone. The door burst open. All right, roared Mr. Hodder. What did you kids do to my motorbike? It's the carburettor, said Johnny. I told you. Here, Arthur, you ought to listen to this. This boy knows things. Kirsty glanced at her watch. 20 minutes, she said. It's more than 2 miles down to the town. Even if we ran, I'm not sure we could do it. What are you talking about now? There must be some kind of code, said Kirsty. If you have to ring up and tell them to sound the siren, what do you say? Don't tell them, snapped Mr. Hodder. This is station BD3, said Johnny, his eyes looking unfocused. How did you know that? Did he tell you? Did you tell them? No, Arthur. Come on, said Kirsty, hurrying towards the door. I got a county medal in athletics. She elbowed Hodder aside. You were right, said the young man as Johnny was dragged out into the night. This is station BD3. I know, said Johnny. I remembered you just telling me. He felt that his mind was being shaken loose in time, and it was only still here because his body was a huge, great anchor. It's downhill all the way, said Kirsty, and sped off. Yoles followed her. Far away, down in the town, a church clock began to strike 11. Johnny tried to lumber into a run, but the ground kept shifting under his feet. Why are we doing this? He thought. We know it happened. I've got a copy of the paper in my pocket, and the bombs will land, and the siren won't go off. You can't steer a train.
That's what you think, said a voice in his head.